We'll hear argument now in the case of Kalupa against the Roselle Park District. Mr. Craddock.
Thank you, Your Honor. If the court please, I would like to address the 12B6 motion dismissal before I address the EEOC charge relating to the complaint. To begin, I'd like to point out that this case involves a 12B6 motion, not a Rule 56 motion. The cases that were cited, most of the cases, if not all of the cases that were cited in the appellee's brief and in the lower court's opinion, were cases involving summary judgment motions, and there's a big difference. Here we're talking about whether a pleading can survive in view of the federal rules involving notice pleading. In the cases cited, the court tended to delve more into the facts to see if there was a genuine issue. So having said that, I believe the lower court's error was the presupposition that was assigned to this case, looking at the claims for retaliation and the claim for religious discrimination, their only basis for ruling that...
Do you think you're going to be better off if you go back? That is it? Do you think you're going to be able to prove that Cruz, who actually fired your client, engaged in religious discrimination?
Yes, because it was the letter from Cruz to Mr. Kalupa, which is in the record attached to his response to the defendant's motion to dismiss.
Record is irrelevant at this stage.
In that letter, he specifically...
The reason I'm asking this is the complaint dwells on behavior by Bassett, who didn't fire your client, and of course the district court says, I'm dismissing this because it doesn't allege what Cruz did or didn't do. And it seems a very strange thing, because... In the end, to prevail in this litigation, your client has to show that Cruz engaged in religious discrimination. Right? That's obviously what got the district court going. The complaint just seems almost beside the point. If you have a good claim against Cruz, why not make it in the complaint?
With all due respect, Judge Easterbrook, the complaint or the everything that happened in the lower court was done pro se, and to a layman, common sense would tell him that the Park District and any agent of the Park District that has any authority is who's doing the discriminating. However, I want to go back to my statement I was making earlier. I do believe I could prove that Cruz was responsible because his letter references the four false write-ups that Mr. Kalupa alleges culminated in his dismissal. In other words, picture the situation this way. Mr. Kalupa's amended complaint alleges the incident of religious discrimination. It mentions his grieving that. It mentions that in retaliation, he was subjected to four false write-ups and to a barrage of other acts of bias against him because of his religion. And then relates that that all culminated, especially the four false write-ups, culminated in his termination. Cruz's letter encapsulates that. It references each of the write-ups that he alleges were false, which happened after he grieved the comments against his religion.
Well, one of the problems we have here at this stage is that we don't know why they say he was fired. We didn't get to that because we're still at the plaintiff's allegations. I guess to follow up on what Judge Easterbrook says, if this goes beyond 12B6, there's going to be a lot of evidence that they fired him for certain reasons, I assume, that other than what you're alleging.
Right, and at this stage, we don't have to go there. All we're concerned with now is
that's
the pleading.
Right, you don't.
Yeah. Now, I just want to make it clear. I wasn't suggesting the complaint has to contain these things. The rule is we're supposed to see if we can imagine some facts consistent with the complaint that would make out a claim. And I assume all of us have imaginations at least that good. But the real question was, after we've exercised our imagination, do you think there's anything still to be proved in this case? And looks like you're answering yes.
Yes. Yes. This complaint at least puts the defendant on notice that at least Mr. Kalupa's theory is he was retaliated against and discriminated against because of his religion. In particular, if I may take an aside for a moment, it would be rather crass for an employer simply to say you're fired immediately after someone grieves discrimination. A more clever way to retaliate, if I may, or to discriminate, is to build a record against that employee so that, and even better, if someone else makes the decision based on that record, to fire them. And that's what Mr. Kalupa is alleging happened. And it's for the trial court to decide, or for the jury to decide, if he alleges facts that support that. If this were a motion
to allege any facts.
No, I'm sorry, not allege, if he proves that. At this stage, we're talking about allegations.
That, of course, is the problem, which I'll be talking to your adversary about. Plaintiffs don't have to allege facts. The question is whether he pleaded himself out of court by alleging facts that show he must lose.
No, because if he could win showing that they built this record
against
him.
That was my question. Do you think you can show something consistent with the complaint without contradicting anything in the complaint that would actually cause him to win?
Yes.
And you're saying yes.
If I may get into the court's dealing with the adverse employment actions, that was the basis of their ruling on the 12b6 motion, was that the write-ups were not adverse employment actions. Their error was to isolate them from the termination. And as I've been talking about before, Mr. Kalupa alleges that the false write-ups resulted in the term. They were meant to build a record against him so that he could be terminated. And there is case law to the effect that at the very least is a sufficient allegation. I cited the Levinsky case and the Krzysztofik case, which point out that you look at all the circumstances surrounding the termination. Briefly, I will turn to the issue of the charge, and that is that the factual basis for the charge was included in the complaint and the amended complaint. The factual basis being for that he was written up, he was placed on administrative leave, he was terminated, he was subject to the religious comments that Bassett made. The weakest point we concede is the failure to promote. The connection to that is that it was on the same day that he was put on administrative leave. We concede that's a weak connection. However, certainly the lower court was right that the retaliation reasonably related to the charge, the failure to accommodate reasonably related to the charge, the disparate treatment reasonably related to the charge, because the essence of the charge was he was discriminated against because of his religion. He was ill-treated and ultimately terminated because of his religion. And because he checked too many boxes on his complaint as a layman, should not be held against him, just as it was not held against the plaintiff in the Jenkins case, Jenkins versus Blue Cross, which is cited in our briefs. If I may address briefly in my remaining time the leave to amend issue, we were attacking the motion to the dismissal with prejudice as a whole. In my mind, encompasses that the result could be it's sent back either to stand on the amended complaint or that it's sent back for the judge to allow him to amend or to ask him to clarify. I didn't in particular address the denial of his leave to amend. I was addressing mainly the issue of the 12b6, which this court has held is rarely granted. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
I'm reserving the remaining time for rebuttal.
Mr. Shoup.
Actually, Your Honor, it's pronounced scope, just like the mouthwash.
Okay.
Dublin Scope on behalf of the Roselle Park District. May it please the court. First, with respect to the plaintiff's failure to promote and failure to accommodate claims, those claims were properly dismissed by the district District Court for failure to exhaust administrative remedies. Mr. Kalupa never raised factual allegations in his EEOC charge that put the Park District or the EEOC on notice that he was raising anything involving a failure to be promoted to any a position within the Park District or a failure to accommodate his religion. Consistent with this court's decision in Cheek, he had to specify the actors, the individuals, and the specific facts that he believed would give rise to that to those two particular theories of relief. He didn't do that. That prohibited the EEOC and the district to engage in the conciliatory process that the whole EEOC charge is exists for. So to allow Mr. Kalupa now for the first time in federal court in his complaint to raise claims that exceed the scope of his charge would defeat the purpose. That's the whole reason why we have the scope of the charge doctrine and which why this court has consistently applied it in cases such as Sitar, Dandy versus UPS, Ajayi versus Aramark, and Chambers versus ATA. The district court got that completely got that correct, and Mr. Kalupa, after having an opportunity to explain why he should raise those claims in an original complaint, an amended complaint, and in his response to our motion to dismiss, has not articulated a legal basis to say why he should be allowed to proceed with those. Now, turning to the actual merits decision on the religious discrimination and retaliation claims, Your Honor, I want to make it abundantly clear. I do not believe, nor does the Roselle Park District believe, that Mr. Kalupa has to say anything more than the following to state a Title VII claim consistent with your writing in Bennett versus Schmidt. He could have walked in and said, I was discriminated because of fill in the blank, and I think this is a Title VII violation. Yes, that is all he had to say. Unfortunately, this is one of those unique cases which Bennett also recognized, a circumstance where a plaintiff, even if it's a pro se, could walk in and say too much. And by saying too much...
In what way did he say too much?
The
district court said, as I understand its opinion, that the problem was that he had said too little. The district court said he didn't offer comparative cases, that is, other people who were treated better with different religions, and he didn't allege what... Cruz did. That is, the district court said your problem in this complaint was you've said too little, and you know we've got a file stamp almost that says summarily reversed, no fact pleading required. Now, in what sense did he say too much? It certainly wasn't what the district court said.
Your Honor, with my understanding, I believe Your Honor is referring to the specific portion of Judge Leinenweber's opinion where he cites the McDonnell Douglas. And I say in my appellate brief that requires some clarification because I don't believe that Judge Leinenweber was saying he had to point to a similarly situated person and he had to point to specific evidence. What I think he was trying to say was with respect to the retaliation claim is what you just mentioned earlier, that everything that he points to with very painstaking specificity is Mr. Bassett was the bigot. Mr. Bassett was the one that did all this. Mr. Bassett, Bassett, Bassett. But
yeah,
the decision maker
fine,
was Mr. Cruz.
How does a complaint which is full of bad things about Bassett plead one out of court with respect to a claim that depends on showing that this other guy also engaged in religious discrimination?
Because consistent with this court's precedent and Shager and all the rest, the decision maker, the actual person that makes the decision, must hold the discriminatory animus.
Absolutely true. How would it contradict the complaint to show at some time in the future that Cruz held the plaintiff's religion against him? Is there any way in which that would contradict the complaint?
It would in the sense that Mr. Kalupa had four, arguably, in the EEOC, four times, in the EEOC charge, his original complaint, his amended complaint, even in his appellate brief before Your Honor, because he can hypothesize any set of facts consistent with the allegations of the complaint, and in his response to the motion for reconsideration, he never, ever said anything remotely saying Cruz was influenced.
Not my question.
Okay.
You plead yourself out of court if you show facts which require an adverse decision. And that means concretely that it would contradict the complaint.
Yes.
To finally attempt to prove the facts that entitle you to win. How would it contradict the complaint to show that Cruz held the plaintiff's religion against him?
Respectfully, Your Honor, I would submit that because of the specificity of the way he only targeted Mr. Bassett, that he's unequivocally saying only Bassett is the bigot. That was my interpretation.
Anything in the complaint that you say unequivocally says that only Bassett held his religion against him?
Where does
the complaint say that only Bassett?
That's the reasonable inference from the fact that the only person he has ever fingered in five different opportunities is Mr. Bassett, not Mr. Cruz. Now, with respect to the retaliation and the with respect to the retaliation claim, Your Honor, we would respectfully suggest that the district court did err in finding that the retaliation claim was within the scope of the charge, because the retaliation there was nothing remotely alleged factually within the scope of the charge that said retaliation. Mr. Kalupa was very clear. He said that he was reprimanded, he was warned, and he claimed that he was terminated, but he did not connect specifically the termination with retaliation. So we're saying that the written warnings and reprimands did not constitute tangible adverse employment actions, which Mr. Kalupa must have as a matter of law in order to sustain both a retaliation claim or a discrimination claim for purposes of Title VII. He never did that. Therefore, the district court was correct in dismissing that portion of the complaint. Now, with respect to leave to amend, we don't believe that the district court erred, because bottom line is, under Rule 15A, the district court, first of all, had already given Mr. Kalupa one opportunity to amend his complaint. Mr. Kalupa, although he was a pro se, had one strategic advantage in the sense that when he amended the complaint, he had our motion to dismiss that would clearly lay out what he could do, essentially give him a free lesson as far as what he could have to do to avoid being dismissed. If he could have consistently alleged, and we told him, if you can allege that Mr. Cruz is the bigot, you can definitely get by. You could state a claim. He didn't do that. Quite frankly, he should be commended for doing that, because if he honestly believes that Mr. Cruz did not engage in discrimination, then he shouldn't be alleging that, obviously consistent with his Rule 11 obligations, in a federal court pleading. He didn't do that. He consistently didn't do that. And so since he didn't do that, I think, respectfully, that you can infer that he would never be able to do that. So being able to giving him leave to amend the complaint would be futile, and therefore it was not, Judge Leinenweber did not abuse his discretion in denying Mr. Kalupa leave to file not a first amended complaint, but remember, this would have been his second amended complaint, which also leads to the fact that even if this the futility and the nature of remanding this case for further discovery, because again, Mr. Kalupa understood that he could have said Mr. Cruz is the bad man, Mr. Cruz had discriminatory animus. That was laid out in our motion to dismiss. He didn't do that. So further discovery is not going to help him. Allege that. If he believed it, he would have alleged it. He didn't allege it. He had ample opportunity to allege it. He never did. So going out and taking depositions and propounding interrogatories and all the rest is not going to change that fact. That's the unequivocal assertion I would respectfully suggest, Your Honor, which would establish he can't state a claim. It's just impossible. That's the impenetrable defense to this lawsuit, which therefore can be dismissed on a 12b-6, because he will never be able to plead and prove consistently that Mr. Cruz had discriminatory animus, had retaliatory animus. That's what he needs to establish if he's going to try to raise either of those claims under Title VII. And unless Your Honors have any other further questions, at this point I just respectfully suggest that for all the reasons stated in our brief and in the district court's opinion, the district court committed no error in the 12b-6 order, and judgment should be affirmed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Scull.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Craddock, anything further?
To begin, the appellee has stressed that Mr. Kalupa was attacking Bassett in his complaint as being the one discriminating against him. If you read the amended complaint, you will see it's not as much as appellee says, that there's actually a link between Bassett and Cruz that is mentioned, and that is a person named O'Malley who had supervisory authority. Again, I don't believe he has to allege that Cruz had this discriminatory animus that stretched all the way back to when Bassett was effecting the discriminatory actions. What Mr. Kalupa alleged, however artfully or inartfully it may have been done, was that what Bassett did in his response and Kalupa's response to it set in motion the chain of events that led to his termination. And Cruz referenced those events when he terminated him, and Cruz relied on O'Malley, who was responsible for the majority of the false write-ups. I ask this court to...
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement.